Which brings us to my last point. I'm going to ask Miguel Crawford to come on up at this point to share just a little bit of something that's going on in his life. And my guess is that most of you don't know Miguel. Some of you may recognize him. Some of you may know him. Come on over. And he doesn't go to this church. He attends a different church. Come on over here. And you're a big fella. He doesn't go to our church, but he's been here on occasion. He's visited on occasion. But his son, Trey, who is 12, right? 12, has been part of our children's ministry for several years. He's gone to Woodlands several times. In fact, he just got back from Woodlands yesterday. He's been a part of our VBS. And he is really close friends with Mario and Justine's son, Amari. They have played ball together for many years. And I've actually known Miguel for about 20 years. We played baseball together back in the day. Our team was terrible. I think the first year we played together, we won one out of, I think, 15 games. Well, that ended, and during that time, we were mostly acquaintances. Didn't really know him outside of baseball or off the playing field. And then, you know, many years go by, and we kind of lose touch with one another. We're not friends. We don't hang out. We don't talk. But I see him from time to time recently because of his friendship with the Jefferson family. He and Mario are best friends and have been together a lot. And he has recently been going through quite a trial. And I want to give you just some background on how we got to where we are. Back in 2010, you're 36 now, so he was in his late 20s at this time. 28 at that time. He was at a baseball game. And the way he described it to me was that this player hit a home run. And this was the kind of player that just didn't hit home runs. Like, you would just be shocked if this person hit a home run. Well, he did. He actually hit two. And so this is exciting because this player hits two home runs. He should never have even hit one home run. It's exciting. And he goes up to cheer, and nothing comes out. He can't speak. Around the same time, I think his wife at the time, they were in an argument, and he went to say something, and he couldn't speak. Very quickly, relatively quickly, the doctors deduced that he had a brain tumor. Grade 2 brain tumor.
Astrocytoma.
Yeah, he said that to me many times, but I still don't know what it is. He had a brain tumor. It was a grade 2 tumor, which is the lowest level of aggressiveness, but it's still obviously not good as a brain tumor. He needed surgery. And so he went and he had surgery. And at that time, they believe they got 100% of this tumor and more or less gave him a clean bill of health at 28 years old. About a year and a half later, he started having some minor seizures. And these were not full-body seizures. They were minor ones, but they were debilitating, and they were worrisome. And so they put him on seizure medication. And it more or less took care of that. And so for, what, 5.5, 6 more years, everything was seemingly fine. Until last year, around August, he started having seizures again. And he was still taking his medicine. So this was very alarming, and he was starting to get worried. He was noticing little things. But like most of us do, when we first experience a medical issue, we kind of push it off to the side for a few months. But then he decided, hey, I better get this checked out. So in November, he made an appointment for an MRI. So he goes to the doctor, and they send him away because of insurance. Turns out he thought his insurance was going into effect November 1st. It wasn't. It was going into effect January 1st, so he has to wait a few more months. And in February, or right around the turn of January and February, he goes and gets an MRI, and it is determined that he has another brain tumor. And this is a picture of it, and he gave me permission to show this, so I'm not breaking all the HIPAA laws or anything like that. But this is his tumor, and this is a picture of him laying down on his back with the camera over him. So this is looking down on his face, and so this tumor...
It's on the left side.
On the left side. Okay, so it's reversed. Yep. So it's in the frontal lobe of his brain. And I find out about this about a month later when I'm meeting with Mario. March 15th, actually, is the day I found out about it. It was a Thursday. Mario and I meet on Thursdays, and we just have our regular meeting. At the end of it, he says, hey, you need to pray for Miguel. And he tells me that he has a brain tumor. And so we pray, And I asked him, I said, do you think Miguel would mind if I reach out to him? And again, I hadn't really connected with Miguel much at all over the years other than seeing him in passing. Not friends, don't know anything about him. Didn't even know he had a brain tumor in 2010. I learned that later. So I sent him a text, hey, do you mind if we get together? And he says, sure, how about tomorrow? Little did I know, he was going the very next morning for the final appointment of the diagnosis of what he had and what they were going to do. So he meets with me that afternoon, and this was about 4 to 5 hours after he got his diagnosis. I mean, it is fresh. He hasn't even gone home, I don't think. And he comes in, and I say, hey, man, how did it go? What did they say? And he goes, it wasn't good. It's not good. He goes, I now have a grade 4 brain tumor, and it is cancer.
Glioblastoma.
Glioblastoma. And it is cancer. And they're going to do surgery to get as much of it as they can. Then they're going to do chemotherapy to kill the cancer, and they're going to do radiation to kill the rest of the tumor, any remnants that they can't get. And then they told him, you more or less have 2 to 5 years to live, best case. So this is a 38-year-old man with a 12-year-old son basically getting...
36.
Oh, 36. 36-year-old man basically getting what is a death sentence. And he comes in, and we're sitting there, and again, I have no idea where he is spiritually at this point. And so my first thought is, I want to know, does he know Christ? Does he know God? Has he turned his life over to him? Because he's going to need that. And so I'm going to look for opportunities to share that with him if he doesn't. And I say, tell me about your faith. How is your faith? Do you remember what you said? He said, it's as strong as ever.
Yeah.
It's as strong as ever. And, you know, sometimes people say they know God and they have faith in God, but they've never really given their heart and their life to Christ. And I wanted to see where he was in his relationship with Christ, and said, so tell me about your relationship with Christ. And he said, it's everything.
It's everything.
It's everything. And so then I thought, okay, this is something we can work with. And he's 4 or 5 hours removed from this diagnosis. He's probably going to be all over the map. It may not have sunk in yet. He's going to be emotional. He's going to be down. He's going to be scared. He's going to be crying, whatever the case may be. And so I wanted to begin to plant seeds that God wanted to use this trial for his good, for his glory, and for the kingdom. And so I was planning on going down this road. Little did I know, though, that God had already been working on him for many months, preparing the way for that. And you told me before August, before you started having symptoms, that you had been praying for something.
Yeah.
Leading up to that.
Yeah.
Tell us what you were praying for.
I was praying for guidance.
And you also told me that you were praying, God, give me a purpose.
Yeah.
Show me your purpose for my life. And then a few weeks later, you believe God answered that prayer in a really direct way. You told me that you had a dream, that you believe God spoke directly to you. Tell us about that dream, and what did God say to you in that?
I had brain surgery.
Youth pastor.
Yeah. I'm a little nervous still.
It's okay. It's all right.
I was going to be a youth pastor.
Yeah, God spoke to him very clearly in a dream. You were going to work with kids.
Yeah.
You were going to work with young adults. You're going to work with youth. He had just been praying, God, give me a purpose. Show me what you want to do with my life. He did not know he had a brain tumor. He wasn't showing any signs whatsoever. And he told me at that time, I said, well, what did that mean to you then? He said, honestly, I just ignored it. Which is what I think a lot of us do when God gives us a message or shares something with us that he wants us to do. Until we're forced to really think about that by life, we oftentimes push it aside. And then when we were sitting there that day, 8 months later, and you had just found out that you basically could potentially die very quickly, you brought up that story and you told me, hey, I've never told anybody this.
I haven't told anyone.
I don't know why I'm telling you now. But God said this to me 8 months ago, around the same time that this started. And I asked you, what does that say to you now. What did God giving you that vision and that purpose do for you?
That he had a plan for me.
That he had a plan for
me.
And so here he is about to go through probably the hardest trial that he will ever go through, harder than most things we've ever experienced, most of us. And he's thinking, God has a plan for me. God wants to use me. And then he told me about a week before the appointment on that Friday morning, God brought him to a verse in one of his morning devotionals. And it was Romans 12:1, and it says, "Therefore I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship." And he said, "I don't know why God gave this to me, but I've been thinking about this for a week." And he pulled it up and he read it and we studied it and we talked about it. And I said, "Well, what does that verse say to you now that you're sitting here looking squarely in the face of possible death? What does God say to you when he says, offer your body?"
Most definitely as a living sacrifice. That my body is not mine.
That his body is not his. And God used the word living to say to him, you're not going to die. He also used that dream to say, I've got a plan for you. You're not going to die. Spoke that to him. And obviously, we have no way of knowing if that was true or not, but that is what God spoke to him. And he
plain as day.
Plain as day. And he used this verse. And the thing I don't want you to miss is that what God said to him is that his body is not his. God has not transferred ownership of his body to Miguel. He hasn't transferred ownership of my body to me. He hasn't transferred ownership of your bodies to you. They are still his. They have always been his. And they're to be used for his glory. Well, you ended up having surgery on April 12th. What ended up happening in that surgery?
They got 95 to 100% of the tumor removal.
They got 95 to 100% of the tumor, and then they sent that tumor off to pathology, and the pathology report came back and said what?
Grade 2 astrocytoma.
No cancer.
But not.
No cancer. And I actually did look up the tumor. I don't know if I spelled it right, but I did look it up, and it said the average lifespan of somebody diagnosed with a tumor like this is 14.6 months after they're diagnosed with it. And it said it is not curable by surgery.
Yeah.
That you really only can treat it with surgery and chemotherapy and radiation, but it is not curable. And so I asked Miguel, I said, with all that, the dream you had, the purpose that God has given you, him telling you he has a plan for your life, and him saying that your body is not your own, that it is his, what do you think about the doctors? He said a team of doctors told him that he had 2 to 5 years to live. A team. What do you think happened?
They were wrong.
They were wrong.
They were wrong.
How did it go away?
God.
God healed him. And yeah. He believes he healed him for his purpose.
Yeah.
Because his body is not his own. And that's true for all of us. Most of us are just not going through a trial like that. And I'm just going to tell this part because, I mean, as you can tell, Miguel is going through speech therapy. When he came out of surgery, he couldn't speak at all. Where the tumor was and all the work they did there, and he has slowly progressed back.
It was
kind
of over my speech area. I mean, it was right over my speech area.
Over his speech area.
That's why I couldn't say anything.
And when I went and saw him after he got the pathology report back and they said no cancer, he's laying in bed and I'm just sitting there and I said, man, I heard that God performed a miracle. And I said, you know why he did that? I said, because he wants to use you. Yeah. And Miguel, laying in bed, barely able to speak, says, use me. Use me up.
Use me up.
Use me up. And that's what he said. And he was terrified to get up here today because he told me the other day when I was taking him home, he said, man, I don't feel smart when I talk. Because I know what I want to say, but I can't say it.
Yeah.
And so the courage you've shown getting up here, I know is because you have submitted your body to him, that it is his, and you want him to use it. And think about this. We got almost 200 people in here that God is using your testimony for. So I thank you. Yeah. You can go be seated.